Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and on your home smart speaker. Brian Hazio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We got a big hour cooking here. We got Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, later in the hour. And CJ Spiller is going to call in around 6:05. So that'll be cool. Catch up with CJ.
Yeah.
And ask him, you know, looking back on his career, because he played in Buffalo. So Bill's Mafia was cheering him on 8 games a year. And big college player as well. So, like, which game, which league, which event did the fans factor in more to? Because college football is wild, man.
You talk about something that's going to change. I mean, everyone loves a tailgate haze. Like, what's that going to look like going forward in the future? It's like Buffalo Bills, college football, those are like legendary tailgates.
I've got
buddies in Carolina that they do not enter the stadium. Like, they just have tickets paid for, but they just party at their car.
Yeah.
That's not happening anytime soon.
No.
Although we had who did we have on recently who was not a scientist, was a sports guy, but said that he's hopeful that we're going to get to a point soon where we realize being out in the open air is not a big problem.
That was Fultz yesterday.
That was yesterday.
It was Jerry Fultz. Yeah, it was Jerry Fultz who said that yesterday. And I think he's right. I mean, we understand that it's transmissible. It's moving rapidly. We get it. I mean, no one's trying to pretend like COVID-19 isn't a beast. But being outside and social distancing outside is doable. It's very doable.
Right.
And it's starting to become encouraged by more and more places. Get outside. Interact with people. Don't hug them. Don't stand right beside them. But if you're going to fire up a barbecue and there's 10 of you and you're none of you are side by side, but you're just sitting and you're outside, I could see that being a possibility by September.
Yeah.
I could see that being a possibility.
I don't know
if you're going to be going into the stadium, but they might be like, hey, if you want a tailgate outside, we can make that work for you.
But you mentioned, like, if there's 10 of you, like, the proximity in those parking lots, they get pretty tight. Like, that's the thing. Like, you'd almost have to limit the amount of people if they are. Like, I don't disagree. You could have a barbecue. You could have a social distance party if you're responsible. The problem is if you're on top of each other. Like, those videos I see of Bill's Mafia, like, there's no social distancing there. Not that they were supposed to. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm just saying, like, there's Winnebagos, guys jumping off of Winnebagos. Everyone's in pretty tight quarters. There's a way to pull it off, but it'd have to be a little bit more responsibly, like maybe
those. And that's applying to every walk of life. So there's no reason why if you're a tailgater, you would expect that you would get some preferential treatment. But I don't think we should go as far to say it's just not going to happen. You know, I think it will. And I do think we're getting a little bit carried away with the this will never happen again stuff. I think it will happen again. I think we will go back to normal. I don't know when that's going to be.
Right.
But like right now, it feels like it'll never happen, but it will. Like in a few years, we're going to be through this. And then if you want to shake someone's hand, you do it. You might not. What I think will change is the social norms and what is acceptable as a response. In other words, someone reaches out their hand to you 3 months ago, you shake it. Because you're like, I'm not going to be disrespectful. I'm not going to embarrass this person. I think in 3 years or a year from now, whatever, right now, if you don't feel comfortable doing that, you say, sorry, not doing the handshake thing, maybe a fist bump, an elbow bump. And I don't think people would take issue with that.
Yeah. No,
so,
you're right. But it's going to be awkward. It's going to be awkward a little bit until we get through this cycle, like this phase, because you're right. Like I saw some, you know, in the sports, like the soccer guys were giving each other elbows. You know, they weren't handing out handshakes or hugs or anything. There was a couple elbows being handed out. Same thing with the UFC on the weekend. Guy wins. Yeah, he goes and hugs his corner because he's been around those guys. They've been tested. But there were, to the ref, he gave out an elbow. To Bruce Buffer, I think his name is, gave out an elbow. So I think the social norms, it's going to be awkward early on where, you know, you think it's back to normal. You go to reach out with somebody, and the person goes, "Nah, I don't handshake. How about an elbow? How about something?"
But I think that'll be okay. I think like we've all been on the wrong side of a handshake that some guy pretends he doesn't see, but you know he did, and he's like, "I'm just not doing it because, you know, I'm a germaphobe or whatever." And you're like, "This is really awkward. Like I have my hand out." Now I think it'll be like, "Hey, it happens. Like I get it. You don't want to shake hands. You don't have to shake hands." I think it'll be on the handshaker to accept the change.
Ty Domi never did that. He never shook anyone's hand, ever.
Yeah, I don't understand how you go through life like never once shaking hands with anybody. Like, how is that even possible?
He just didn't do it.
I guess he just
didn't do it.
It's your life.
Fine with it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You're not breaking any rules. All right. He went to Clemson, first-round pick, played with Buffalo, part of Bill's Mafia, I'm sure. Making his debut on the show, here is CJ Spiller. What's up, CJ?
What's going on, guys?
Not much, man. We're talking about, I guess, the era we're living in and potentially some new norms in the future. Are you a handshake guy, or would you avoid that these days?
No, I'm a handshake guy. Okay. I mean, obviously,
will you still be?
I mean, just to, you know, try to make, you know, I ain't gonna say I don't trying to want to make fun of the thing, but you know, every now and then, just to try to lighten up the mood, I give an elbow. But I'm still very cautious of, you know, who hands I'm shaking and stuff like that and things like that.
Well, the selfie game, I mean, you basically came into the NFL just as selfies were exploding. And I can only imagine how many people stopped you in Buffalo or wherever you happen to be and said, "CJ, can I get your picture?" Any awkward interactions with the selfie game at any point in your career?
I haven't had any too many of those where, you know, you with the selfie game is, you know, the biggest thing is when you get the older generation that's not used to the iPhone, that wasn't into the iPhone world. You have to get the camera phone.
Yeah.
I think that's the funny part that I get out of all of it. But as far as, you know, doing the selfie stuff, it's kind of been, I guess you say, pretty cool.
Okay. We were talking about the idea of, you know, no fans and how it's likely to be the case this September in the NFL if and when they play, and in college football if and when they play in September. But you went to Clemson, a monster, you know, like how many thousands of fans show up for those home games, and you played in Buffalo, you played in Kansas City. Arrowhead is famous for being how loud it is. Which team gains more from the fans? Is it college football or is it pro football?
Oh, man, you put me on the spot there. I would probably say college. Just the college atmosphere. I think if you ask really anybody that was really truthful with you, I would probably say the college atmosphere is definitely different than the NFL atmosphere, if that makes any sense, just because of the tailgating. I mean, that's not to, you know, downplay the NFL because it's great and has great fan bases, but just about not everybody has a Bills Mafia type fan base in the NFL. I mean, that's just the way it goes. But in the college football world, every home game, if you're the home team or opposing team, it's always going to be some type of tailgating going on, going into that stadium, and that's just not the case with the NFL. And you know, it has to do with, you know, the parking and all that stuff. So I would probably say the college probably has the upper hand when it comes to that.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. I mean, the students, the bands, like just a college band go on the whole game, changes the atmosphere. And the idea of being a younger guy who's not making any money, who's, you know, maybe you're a freshman, you're a sophomore, you're trying to find some life from the crowd and it's not available to you, that'd be difficult. I would assume in the NFL you're like, all right, we're getting paid, we're pros, let's go out and do it. Like, let's
go play. But it's still difficult, though. And I think the biggest thing I would say, I'd have had that experience both in the same location. When we played Miami at college, the Miami Hurricanes, I remember going out pregame and saying, "Holy cow, we're gonna have to find some energy from within our sideline," just because they didn't have a lot of fans in the stands. But then when we came back out probably, you know, right before kickoff, you know, it started filling up a little more with fans. And I got that same feeling when I was with Buffalo and we went and played the Miami Dolphins, is that, you know, you get there, it's not many fans in the stand because everybody down there, they're not all Dolphins fans. But, I mean, they just want to be to a game, so they're not showing up early and getting that excitement going, getting the juices flowing. So as a player, you've got to try to say, you know, going to your head, I got to find this type of energy from somewhere else, either through my teammates or just some self-motivation, some self-talk, something to kind of get me going. Compared to if you go to Kansas City or you come to Buffalo, you know, you step out there during pregame, that thing will be halfway full. So, I mean, you definitely have some stadiums where you have to find that juice to kind of get yourself going.
With former Buffalo Bill C.J. Spiller, Bill's Mafia, famous for jumping through tables and their tailgate game is off the charts. What was your experience like just interacting with the fans in Buffalo?
Man, you know what? It's they have one of the best fan bases in the NFL. You know, I always Bill's Mafia, I always have a special place in my heart. Obviously spent 5 years there, you know, went through a lot with those guys, both good and bad. But one thing I can say about that fan base, they show up and they show up no matter the record, both home and away game. And, you know, you don't get that in every organization in NFL. So to me, that's why I think Bills Mafia definitely is a top two, top three fan bases throughout the whole NFL, just because them guys, they show up and they show out no matter the record. And, you know, I remember when we got off, I want to say it was 2012 or 13 when we got off to like that 5-0 start. And you always hear the story about you can feel the electricity throughout the city. And I remember just driving around like feeling like you can actually feel the electricity, the excitement throughout the city, just talking to people in grocery stores, going through the drive-thru, talking to the cashiers. I mean, you can just feel the excitement that they was having just because of the good start that we had. Obviously, we didn't finish that season on a high note, but getting up to that fast start, you can just feel the energy in, surrounding the town. And it was a great start.
CJ, don't you think you have to have some success on the ice or on the field or the court to have that fan base, have that, like, notoriety? It's like we're in a city, Toronto, where everyone talks about this great fan base, but there's been hardly any success. Don't you think you have to have, like, winning to have that fan base be recognized properly?
Yeah, I definitely think that goes hand-in-hand. You know, winning obviously enhances the fan base, keep the fans energized, keep them excited, keep them coming back to games. And unfortunately, like you say, Toronto, they just won the NBA championship, you know, a year or two ago. So I'm pretty sure that fan base is already getting bigger and bigger. But even though they own the international team, they're still up there in that area. You know, that's a great fan base, you know, compared to, you know, Los Angeles Lakers. They're just a global name. They're an icon name. It's a historic franchise. So I don't think they'll ever get to that status. But I think just for where they're located, I think the Raptor fans does a wonderful job, and that same thing with NFL teams. I think, you know, the more you win, the more excited your fans are about that season and the coming season to come. But as players, you have to go out there and give those fans something to be excited about. You know, if you're going out there and you're losing, you know, year in and year out, you know, it's not giving those fans nothing excited about. But that's why I feel like Buffalo has one of the best fan bases, because, you know, it's been a long drought. Now they're starting to get that winning feeling back. But those guys still showed up. You know, rain, sleet, snow, it didn't matter. Those fans were still in the stands. They might have left early if we was losing during the game, but they were still showing up, you know, doing, like you say, going through the tables. I mean, so they were still showing up and still supporting us. And as a player, you just really just want to do more, because you see the excitement and the passion that they have for you to go out there and win.
Great catching up with you. We appreciate it, CJ. We'll do this again down the road. Thank you for this.
All right, thank you.
CJ Spiller. former Buffalo Bill. Well, like I know I'm at home.
I know, buddy.
The Grappler and Mullen, no one's texting back. I'm texting. I'm like, hey, yeah. what's going on here? The phone's bad and no one's
But he
no
kept hanging on for dear life. Like he would disappear, but then back. He would come back. Oh, and then it was like, okay, keep him on. And then it would just go south. And your head shaking just kept.
I was so rattled.
There was three very strong head shakes. And one, like, I was watching Owen, the return beat. He's trying to keep it together. I turned my mic off because I'm like, I can't keep it together either. Because I'm like, this guy's head is going to explode.
I know. When I see him shaking his head and getting mad, I find it so funny and I have to laugh. It's the funniest thing I can ever see.
I know.
It's an unfortunate set of circumstances. It's no one's fault.
Well, here's what's happened. Like, I have to give Mullen has to make the call. Like, ultimately, yeah. Mullen's the guy, the only guy in the studio. So he's the one that's got to put him on hold or not. I can't. Yeah. If I'm in studio, I can talk back and say, that's it. Like, get rid of him. I don't mean that to be disrespectful, but his phone was bad. Like, his
Brutal.
Phone, it was really, really in and out, which isn't his fault. It happens. We've been lucky for a couple of months. We've had very good reception somehow. But I just feel like I have no control over the show. Like, yeah, I have no control. And, hey, what are you going to do?
Well,
it's all
you text
good.
Mulls. You text Mulls, and Mulls wrote back like he's hanging on by a thread. I thought he said that. It's like it's just hanging on, and then that's it. Like, and then I was waiting. Like, there was one question I was going to put my thumb up there to be like, I'm going to ask it, and then his phone started cutting out, and I lost myself because I was watching you shake your head, Hayes. I'm like, Hayes is going to flat out cut him off right now and just let him go. Like, and yeah. He was very thoughtful with his answers, and that's the thing. Like, it's not a bad interview. It's just unfortunate that his phone was cutting out.
Yeah, and you know how I stand on this. I've been saying it forever. It's the worst. Like, it's crushing radio, and I hate it.
It is.
But I can't do anything about it. Like, unless I'm going to literally talk over the radio and be like, hey, I don't have a talk back button here to even be like, hey, put it on hold. We'll call him back. You know, the Grappler is just crickets. He's not contributing anything to the text messaging. Yeah. No. He's
had a tough day today. He's
well, I mean, that's where I'm leaning on the Grappler to be like, yeah, I'm hearing it too. Not great. Why don't we throw it on hold or something? Yeah. And just crickets.
Feathers.
His brain's in Barry.
Yeah, well, it is. It's crossing over to a different world.
His number came up as 289 in the group in the group text.
Steve. I don't know. 289 Steve.
289 Steve. Hey guys. Oh God, who is that?
Don't know. What
anyway, it's all good. Thanks to CJ Spiller for joining us. And Darren Dreger coming up, our TSN Hockey Insider. We'll get to Jerry's After Dark later in the hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Darren Dreger, our Hockey Insider, will join us here in just a moment. And we were talking about this earlier, the NBA. Some news coming out today, ESPN reporting that the NBA is looking at a June 1st target date for teams to start calling players back into their respective markets. And if that's the case, they also believe that by June 1st, most markets, if not all the markets, will be able to expand their protocols and the restrictions on the amount of people in the gym, what they can do at the gym, how they operate on a daily basis, basically opening up, the leagues opening up. So if that's the case, if they're targeting June 1 to get everyone back, and I would assume, let's say there is a 14-day quarantine for every team, just hypothetically speaking. That means as of June 15th, I think we're talking training camp. So if we're talking a 2, maybe 3-week tops training camp, I think you're looking at the first week of July, the NBA is going to be tipping off. And Shams Charania of The Athletic reporting that Orlando and Disney appears to be the primary target right now for a hub city for all the teams, all the players, all the personnel.
That's gone up and down, hasn't it, Brian? They're saying they've talked about that, they like it, then it's off the table, and it's going back and forth.
And wasn't that a blogger that kind of like brought that to light?
It was.
Like 2 months ago? Remember
we talked
about it?
Yeah, someone with Yahoo, who's from Orlando and covers the Magic. He said, listen, guys, this is the place. Like, this is the place. And I wonder if he got tipped off by someone with the Magic saying, hey, just so you're aware, they're looking into this pretty heavily. But he detailed why it made all the sense in the world. You have multiple hotels. You've got a massive property there that's private.
Yeah,
you
can
control.
It was a great piece, and it was great points.
Yeah, and they've got a bunch of courts there. They've got a bunch of training facilities. They host tournaments there, so the TV capabilities are all set up. It made too much sense.
Yeah,
it was on the players.
The guys could be riding Space Mountain, flying around. Like, you could have, like,
do anything, I guess,
some entertainment there. It'd be great.
Yeah, basically, once you test and you're in there, it's like, okay, we're in. We're all good. This is a big bubble city. So that appears to be where the NBA is going. Where the NHL going is a different story. I mean, maybe Edmonton appears to be, you know, really wanting it and potentially a front runner at this point. Here's our TSN Hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Dregs, I'm sure you saw that report that the NBA is looking at Orlando and Disney as a potential hub city. And I saw Pierre jump on that and say, well, that would maybe leave Vegas as a potential option for the NHL if they're not competing with the NBA. But if it's Vegas that's in the running, Edmonton's in the running, doesn't there have to be a hub city in the East and the West? Or could they potentially avoid that and have two in the West, two in the East, two in Canada? I mean, how might they look to handle that?
Well, I mean, all of it could be, you know, all of it is being considered. What comes to fruition? Clearly, we're going to find out in the days and certainly the weeks ahead. More and more, though, guys, I'm hearing that it's more likely to be a two-hub format as opposed to a multiple-hub format. And then it gets complicated, right? Because, yeah, in a perfect scenario, you'd have a hub city, a hub location in the East to house the 12 teams out of the East. And you'd have a hub city, be it Vegas or Edmonton, in the West. No guarantee of any of that. I mean, you could have two hub cities, and both of them could be, you know, in the West. I mean, that's the reality. There are some who believe that Vegas is a lock for the NHL.
I agree. And
you know, Edmonton has done an admirable job, and Edmonton seems to tick every box there should be in terms of criteria. But the quarantine issue, fellas, is a big one. And the Canadian government and the provincial governments appreciably are wrestling with it, right? And so what we know is this.
What element of it, Darren?
Well, just whether or not you have to quarantine again. What we know is players come into, you know, wherever they are, you know, be it in Europe or in Russia or in the United States, when you come back to your NHL city, you're going to have quarantine for 14 days. But the question is, you know, if you're in Chicago and you get the call to Edmonton, do you now, as a Chicago Blackhawks organization, have to go into Edmonton and quarantine for another 14 days? And shouldn't testing alleviate all of that? That's what the provincial governments, the feds in Canada, and the NHL are wrestling with right now. And also, fellas, there are some who wonder whether Gary Bettman wants anything to do with Canada, because, yeah, you've got, you know, a strong rights holder in Rogers from a national perspective, but NBC carries a ton of weight, and they've got a contract that they're working on with the National Hockey League as well. Could that factor in? Does NBC, as an example, get a say in, okay, well, here are your options. We can go to Vegas or we can go to Edmonton. Which would you rather? And I don't know. I mean, from an American perspective, maybe an American location for the network is better off.
I don't think you can even bring that question up, Darren, right now. It's like, where would you rather go? It's like, if you're locked in a hotel for 12 weeks, who cares where it is? Like, it's not like you're going to be ripping up the city or saying this would be a better place to be, or I don't know, maybe there's some things like golfing, or because I have buddies in the States that you call them up and it's like they're teeing it up and playing golf like normal. Like, but I don't know. It's not like any city, like, doing stuff is not an option.
No, it's not. But what about the scheduling? Like, has that come up yet? Like, if, for instance, let's say they're playing in Edmonton. Now, I'm sure they have multiple NHL caliber rinks in the Edmonton area. What I mean by that is, like, the size of the ice pad, potential
TV lighting,
etc. But what if it's like, okay, we only have this rink and we have 12 teams here? Like, how are you going to get everyone to play on the same ice surface over the course of whatever it is, a month?
Games a day or what?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, stagger games?
You'll see them. Yeah, you'll stagger games. I mean, you could see a minimum of three for sure. I mean, again, I'm not going to wave pom-poms for the Edmonton Oilers in the city of Edmonton. But if you look at that facility in Edmonton with the practice rink there, you know, you've got roughly 1 million square feet in the facility in Edmonton. And what's attractive about that is you could put 12 teams in there and you could confine each team inside the building from an equipment standpoint and sanitation and all of that. Man, that makes management a whole lot easier, doesn't it? So those sorts of things... Can you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
You guys hear that? No.
Tiny.
My home office is beautiful. So those sorts of things are being considered. But I can tell you, and we've been working on this story for the last few days anyway, wrestling with the levels and layers of government in Canada in association with the health authorities is a beast. And it's not like we're wrong here in this country. Just the restrictions are that much different. So... I think we find out within the week, maybe not this week, but within 7 days, as to what the sign-off is and exactly what the return-to-play scenarios are and who the hub cities are. But they might get creative. It could get real interesting.
Dregs, I agree. And I agree. I think Edmonton could house it. I think Vegas would easily house a scenario just with, you know, have them take over a hotel. Like, I think Vegas is a slam dunk. But the one thing, and I was speaking to somebody who was dialed up in the NBA last night, and he said something very interesting to me. Because I said, we were talking about LeBron. I said, do you think a guy like LeBron would have a problem like being quarantined and locked in, you know? And he said, LeBron's not going to be a problem. He'll bring whoever he wants in there. He said, you know what the concern is? And I it got me thinking about hockey. He said, it's the outer layer players who are younger and single and are going to want to sneak a girl in or going to, and I'm not joking. Like, we're going to want to do something or sneak off campus. Like, you know, sneak out of the dorm at night to go have a drink, go sneak and visit a girl on Tinder or something like that and get busted.
I don't think they would do it, Jamie. They'd be smart enough not even to think about it.
Listen,
there's a lot of players.
I'm just telling you right now, you're talking 12 NHL teams, 12 NBA teams, all under one house, and you're going to be there for 40 days. You can't tell me there's not one idiot in there that's going to try to think he's above the law.
And how do you manage that? And like, do you literally have like a full force of security? Like the gates of the facility, whatever that is, you know, the safe zone of the hub city is policed. Like, you do not poke your nose out the door or
know if people, Darren, want to live like that. I mean, it's just...
Well, then you're not going to play.
You're going to have to. You have to live like that. That's the point. They're going to have to lock the doors at night, have security. Think about it. If it's in Edmonton, you don't think all the seekers are going to come out and try and snivel around and like, no.
I think, Jamie, they should be allowed. Like, if we're allowed, the four of us, to go to Walmart and get some groceries or like just I go for a walk or a run or a drive in my car, like, I don't think it's normal to say you're going in that hotel and you don't leave. Like, it's just... I don't think they'll be down with that.
Yeah, I think that would be a sticking point. I also think you have to consider where, you know, what else is going to be happening in the city. I think from an NBA perspective, Orlando is a very quiet town. So and Disney is massive. So you may be able to, you know, alleviate some of the concerns because you're like, it's not like these guys are cruising into Manhattan here or they're going to Vegas. But even Vegas will not be Vegas. There's not going to be anybody there. Vegas is a ghost town. So if you go there, go ahead, walk the streets. There's no one out there. Right? So I don't know if there's – in Edmonton's different because if you're talking hockey players and they're going to be around and people in Edmonton, there'll be a buzz
the problem with what you just said, Brian, and I hear you, but if you're allowing your NHL players to walk the streets because you don't believe that there's anything going on, then how do you contain your hotel people? Like the people who work inside the hotel, cooks, your bus driver, all of that. Everything. Like if self-isolation is imperative to getting the game back onto the ice and that's the format they have to follow, then it's all in. Like you can't have hotel staff that's on shift work and, one group gets to go home for 3 or 4 days and then a new group comes in. Like, that can't be how it works. Otherwise, you're going to blow your brains out doing a bazillion tests because everybody in that environment is going to have to be tested multiple times.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know how they overcome that. I really don't. I think in the NBA it went a long way that the players came together, the superstars, and said, we're doing this. Like, we're going to find a way to make it work. I gather that in the NHL, I've heard players suggest the same thing. I haven't heard any players come out and say, we don't want to play. Well, you know, baseball's different. Some guys have been like, I'm not doing it unless we figure this out, that out, or the other thing. Go ahead, Noodles.
Well, I was just going to say, the only thing I can think of, and I don't know if you guys have been on a cruise before, but don't you think that they would be trying to set up a scenario? Like, a cruise is like a city on water, and basically you are contained right there.
Might be a bad example right now. No one's going on a cruise for the next 30 years.
I understand it, but what I'm saying, you're trying to create an environment where everyone's all under the same roof, and there's still entertainment, there's still restaurants, there's still things to do. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the people that are trapped at sea right now with coronavirus. Yeah, I'm talking about creating a bubble that where people could live for a month in there and still function.
And Vegas could easily do that.
Vegas could easily. You know, Edmonton would be a little bit more of a challenge because guys are going to want to golf. Guys are going to want to do that. How do you create an environment where, you know, in that bubble, in that area, a guy can still shoot nine?
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know if it's been talked about officially, but that very scenario was thrown at me the other day where, you know, whether it's Vegas or it's the Ice District, which is – really encompasses the area around the arena in Edmonton, and you have a dedicated golf course. So, you know, you got 12 teams. All right, well, the Oilers have the golf course today, and tomorrow it's the Chicago Blackhawks, and the day after that. I don't know that the golf courses will go for it, and I don't know. But if you're quarantining all of these players, it has to be for more, and this is going to sound terrible, it has to be for more than just the lure of the Stanley Cup, doesn't it? Like, they've got to be able to live a life to some degree. So it has to include their family, access to their family, and something to keep them mentally stable. And so if you've got some entertainment that's, you know, encompassed, then that's fine. And, you know, you've got access to a golf course that's dedicated to, you know, this self-isolation, then maybe the players go for it.
Well, let's hope. And it sounds like we're looking at a 24-team playoff, which means that will include a bunch of teams that we were not expecting to be included. You know, eight in total, four from each conference. And at this point, that would include the Islanders, the Rangers, the Panthers, the Canadians, I believe. Maybe I got that off in terms of point percentage, but those teams would be there in the East, and in the West, it would go all the way down to Chicago. So Chicago, Arizona, Minnesota, Vancouver, all in. Of those eight teams, is there one that sticks out to you guys as, you know, a potential icebreaker, basically, someone that's going to step in and go on a run? Like, if you had to put your money on one of the bubble teams to go on a run, which one would you choose?
Carey Price standing on his head for a couple of weeks would scare the hell out of me.
What about the Rangers? Yeah.
That's who I think.
I think the Rangers are a hell of a team.
Like, they're good.
They are quiet, like sneaky, sneaky good. And you know what? You get that Shesterkin's going to be healthy. Remember, he was in a car accident. You know, like, that's the one thing. Like, you're right. Everyone's going, you know, Larry Brooks wrote an article, Carey Price is scaring everyone and blah, blah, blah. He was trending on Twitter today. Yeah, he's a great goaltender, but there's going to be great players and the league is going to be healthy. That's going to be the one thing, you know, for the most part, but you're going to see teams with full rosters going at it. So, you know, the Rangers are going to be scary.
Rangers would scare me.
Like, there's going to be some good teams because there's no – like, the Florida Panthers, I was looking at it last night. They're 2 points out of a playoff spot. Like, they're –
right. You know, here they'd be in hand. And look at Bobrovsky. Like, what if he finally decides, all right, I'm ready. Yeah. Like, I'm going to – he can put on a clinic just as much as Carey Price can.
Exactly.
Like, everyone's scared of Carey. Why not Bob?
Right.
And I can tell you guys, like, you know, that return to play committee, which has five NHL players on it, this is what they're chewing on right now, is what if the Montreal Canadiens, who didn't have a hope of making the playoffs, who's kidding who? You know, Carey Price stands on his head. they're head-to-head with Pittsburgh, or a top team in the Eastern Conference, and if they're on equal footing and they dispatch that team, yeah, shame on the team that was higher based on regular season standings. But is it fair to give all 24 teams the same equal start? And, man, unless they've made progress in the last 24 hours, they have been chewing on that. They've been chewing on it because it's tough. And I don't know that this has been presented as a reality. It was thrown at me as a what if. You know, what if they forced a team like Montreal or Chicago, if you want, whoever, Rangers. Okay, if it's a best of five play-in against whatever team you're matched up against, you're down a game to start the series. Just as a disadvantage.
Right. It's almost like a best of four almost. You got to win three. Right.
Well,
four,
yeah,
basically.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of. I don't know if like, that makes sense.
But. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. You might as well not include them. You know what I mean? Like, if you really want them included, they've got to be on equal standing, regardless if you like it or not.
Well, unless they win the first game of that series, and now it's 1-1. Right?
Yeah, that's fair, but you're right. Nothing's going to be perfect, but these scenarios, no. You don't want these scenarios to be wacky. Like, okay, now you're starting. Like, to me, Gary Bettman said through all of this, he said, we don't want to mess with the integrity of this. Like, I get that, but not everyone's going to be happy. Like, you're not.
No,
there's not going to be a perfect scenario, because even cutting it at 20 teams, I think there's one or two teams that would get screwed out of this based on the. I looked last night. I think it was Winnipeg that would be Winnipeg, on the outside, but yet they would have more points than somebody who made it, but they played one more game. Like, how is that fair? You know what I mean? Like,
well,
I think
what
they're
about,
saying.
What about the owners and how they're going to react to assessing their team and their GMs and their coaches? In other words, if you've got a team where you're like, yeah, this is like Montreal, there's a lot of heat on Bergevin, a lot of heat on Julian. If they get in, even though they didn't deserve to, can they go to Molson and say, hey, we got in? Like, give us another year, we got in. And what if they win a round or two? Then does that mean you feel better about your team? And all of a sudden they weren't on pace for 82 points and missing the playoffs by a significant margin? Like, it just I don't know how you're supposed to react to it and address your team in the future based on a totally different system.
Yeah, right?
It's going to have to happen.
Yeah. It is going to have to happen. It'll happen in a small period of time. You know, whenever the 19-20 season ends, right? Now you're on the clock as an organization, as a league, as a players association, because you've got a boatload of stuff to get done, and you'd better like your coach, and you'd better like your general manager, or there'd better be somebody available who's better than those guys to make a decision in short order. There are teams around the league that are, you know, making calls and I wouldn't say interviewing per se, but starting to nose around, right? I mean, we know that New Jersey's going through a process there, and sooner than later, I'm sure Minnesota will get into it, although, you know, Bill Guerin wants to, he wants to make sure that Dean Evason has an opportunity to wrap up the year, but you're thinking about it on a day-by-day basis.
Yeah, I mean, even look at the Maple Leafs. Like, they were clearly a flawed team. They're a team, though, that I think they truly believe in the team. I think Shanahan and Dubas truly believe. I think they believe if Keefe was there all year, they'd be comfortably in. But they're holding on for dear life in a 16-team playoff picture. They're comfortably in if it's a 24-team picture. But they were flawed, and they had to make moves. But if they believed in them, and then after 4 months off, all of a sudden the Leafs come back, and let's say the Leafs get to a cup final, then what, that's the real team? Or was it the team that for 70 games kept tripping all over itself and had holes?
Right.
Which team is it? And I would think Dubas would say it's the playoff team because that's the team I built. That's the team I believed in last September.
Anybody would say that.
But what if they fall on their face?
And next year, exactly. Guess what team's coming back next year? The 70-game team.
Yeah, exactly.
Team. That's likely the team that's for real.
Right.
Anyway. All right, Dregs. Good stuff, buddy. We'll do it again later in the week.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider.
I think that's awesome talking hockey.
Yeah, I know. I was talking to the Grappler about this today. We're like, we got to start talking about teams and games and
I did about an hour last night, just like looking at the league again, because you're like, oh, that team, like we forget LA, the LA Kings had won 7 in a row going into this pandemic.
Right.
They didn't want to win 7 in a row. Like they're taking themselves out of that. Like I was just zooming around the league to see like, okay, who was having a great season, who could, you know, in my mind, storylines, because it's going to happen. Like, I know we think it's miles away, but like this may happen sooner than later, and we're going to have to be schooled in it again and start digging in. Like, remember, Hayes, it wasn't that long ago you and I were like, where's Minnesota in the standings, you know? And then we
no
had
kidding.
To look it up.
I totally forgot. They hit a heater, and,
yeah.
And they
kinda
took
like
off.
They snuck their way into that picture, right? Where I was like, yeah, they were gone. They fired the coach, and then they hit a heater. Like, it was kind of neat just to look and – you know, all the obviously that World Cup games are on. I don't know if you guys have been watching those.
No.
That North American team, I said to Steph last night, now would be the most dominant team in that tournament because all of those guys are 4 years older now.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's like if you look,
they
yeah,
would
I
destroy
know.
People.
But if you look at that team on paper now, it's unreal.
Who was in net for them?
Well, they had Gibson and Matt Murray.
Matt Murray, but yeah.
But which is fine. They're fine.
That's fine.
But well, Gibson's a good goalie, and so's Murray, but they both have had stumbling. But like the defensive core was really, you know, young and mobile, and then you look at the forwards, it's McKinnon,
loaded.
Matthews, Goudreau, McDavid, like
Shifley.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Shifley. I was watching it last night, I'm like, this team would just chew the league up right now.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be the best team in the tournament. For sure.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, no, so I mean, hopefully we're getting there. If the NBA appears to be going there, the NBA and the NHL for the most part are joined, right?
Agreed.
Like in terms of their timelines, in terms of what they're doing, they'll likely have a different setup. The NBA, I haven't heard of them expanding their playoff picture, but I think if the NBA feels like June 1st is a date for them to start really getting people back in, I'd be surprised if the NHL isn't thinking the same thing, give or take a couple of days. And then once you've got everyone convened in the right spot,
yeah.
It's on the government to say, go ahead, you can go out and play, or you can go out and practice or whatever. And I think once you do that, you got everyone together, you do it. You get on the ice, and you get in the gym. And then before you know it, you're playing games, which is what's happening around the world, slowly but surely. We'll come back and wrap it up. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN app.
Welcome to Jerry's After Dark, where all of your wildest hot takes come to life. Because Jerry's always in the mood for one more, and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, reluctantly we are aware of that, Jerry. We know what you're talking about.
One more
horny hot take.
Zach Hyman was on pace for a career season before the shutdown. Well, worry not, Leafs fans, because he'll score 30 at least once in his next 3 full seasons.
Okay. All right.
30 goal score?
Yep. Jerry's calling it.
I'm going to give that one a 70%. I think that he's forcing himself to play with Austin Matthews a lot of the time, and he's going to bang in 30 goals.
30's a lot of goals,
It's
a lot of goals.
Dude, when you're sniffing around out front of the net and you've seen guys that are just front of the net guys, Holmstrom, you can get 30. He'll do it.
But he got a bunch of empty net goals,
Big-time empty net. He had like 7 or something this year.
Yeah.
They all count, boys.
I understand that. Michael Grabner scored 7 or 8 the year that he had 25 from the Rangers. I'm lower on this. I think he's a 20-plus guy. I really do. But I think the goals go to the other guy. I think he's looking for the other guy is going to get the goals on that line. So
being 34 or 88 or 16, whoever it is.
Yeah, I think Matthews is the gunner on that line, and they look for him. I think Hyman will be 25, which is nothing to sneeze at for especially what he makes, 2.4, I believe.
Right.
Like that's a bargain. And
how many more years has he got?
Only one more
after this. I'll say 30. I'll stick with 30%. I'm in the minority. I'd love to see it. It would be a great story based on, you know, his growth as a player, his work ethic. Everyone loves Zach Hyman.
Right.
But, you know, to rack up empty net goals, to take the puck off Matthews or Marner, 30's a lot.
I think he's one of those guys, though, Brian. Like, he's one of those guys where I think he can get better. Like, regardless of his age, I know he's not 19, but he can just – he'll work at his game and find something to bring to the table year after year and get better.
Yeah.
I think he's that kind of guy.
Yep. Yeah. I agree with that. But it might be playmaking. You know what I mean? It may not just be goals. Maybe he adds more assists to his resume. I don't know. But he's going to get opportunities. Like, he's proven that. He's playing, and yeah. he's playing a lot.
Yeah, but, I'm lower on this. I'm 21%.
Okay. All right, boys. Good stuff today. Good energy. Good stories.
Yeah. Mona, thanks for the memories.
Mona, shout out. Mullen, the grappler. Good stuff as always. Yeah, we're rolling. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.